It's interesting, Tom, because, you know, there are little signs that he's just becoming a bit of a pain in the posterior.
I was referred to as a pain in the ass, you know, and I hate pain in the posterior, but I'm going to say exactly what it really was. Obviously, I don't want to come across as that, and I'm going to say this. I want to be very clear. I'm an adult.
I did actually get a chance to talk to him briefly in the locker room Friday, because I shouldn't have said that. You know, it's that sort of speculative. So that was purely speculative on my part. It's usually a lane I'm not residing in. So I did want to apologize to him, and I made several efforts to do that. I talked to him Friday. I know you're looking at me sideways. You wouldn't apologize. That's fine.
This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens,
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
WEEI Afternoons, once called Wrongheadedness Radio by somebody who's now involved in a soap opera here in the city of Boston, Stephon Diggs, the Phil Perry and Tom Curran, and whatever the heck is going on.
I would dare say that we were the original pain in the posterior as far as Boston sports goes, yes?
Sure. Is that a good thing? Wait, am I taking credit or blame?
Both.
Okay. That's Nick Fitzy Stevens, Andy Hart here on WEEI Afternoons, and we touched on this late in the show yesterday because Stephon Diggs had a press conference in which he used some of the time to talk about how he's an adult, how he doesn't want to be seen as a pain in the posterior, and by name addressed Phil and Tom. Didn't have their last names, but Phil Perry, NBC Sports Boston, Tom Curran, NBC Sports Boston.
They're not big enough to celebrities to just to go by Phil and Tom, you know, like Beyonce.
Yeah, they are not. They might want to think so, like we all like to think so, but they are not. But it's good that he knew their names and threw them out there. But we now have this, I guess I'll call it a situation. And Tom Curran, speaking of him, he will join us at 3:30, as he does every Thursday. So I think we'll have the opportunity to talk to him about this and whatever went down, because I still am a little unclear. So we know that Phil Perry made the pain in the posterior comment, which I believe was when Phil was in Minnesota and Tom
was
back
in Boston.
Yes. I don't know exactly why Tom is dragged into this. I know they kind of go together. They work together a lot. This is a life I used to lead where Andy Hart and Paul Perillo were like interchangeable, like, oh, those two guys, they're always together and they do the same jobs and they're blah, 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 kind of. And Paul says something like,
Kirsch and Scalavino would try to stay out.
You people like blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, wait, Paul said it. Why am I part of this situation or vice versa? So this whole thing with Stephon Diggs, and we, as I said, we got a chance to touch on it in odds and ends at the very conclusion of yesterday's show at Fenway Park. The show we started with some breaking news that that Roman Anthony was going on the IL. Thank you, Alex Cora, for sharing that with us and ruining our Red Sox season, because the game that came after that information, if that's any indication of how the Red Sox are going to perform post-Roman Anthony, well, it's football season.
The Sox season isn't ruined. It's not over. The fat lady hasn't even arrived at the she's not even dressed at the house, let alone considering calling a Lyft or an Uber down to the ballpark to sing. Come on.
I'd rather the fat lady come than Jordan Hicks arrive at Fenway Park, because Jordan Hicks is awful.
And I'm ready for them to eat that $25 million right now, Andy.
You may hear that talked about in my three-point stance today. Yes, Dan Ball?
Did you see the news from today? Per Chris Cotillo, he has been put on the injured list with what they are describing as a shoulder injury. But you can jump to your own conclusions.
You know, can you be put on the injured list for terribleness?
Nope. You got to make up an injury. You got to come up with something. Okay. You know, he would fit in well in The Wizard of Oz. Like, if he was with the Scarecrow and the rest of them as they're going to Oz to ask for something, the ability to pitch would be what he'd ask the wizard for.
If I only had some aim.
If I only could throw pitches like a major league pitcher who's making $12-plus million a year. But no, we're going to start off with this Stephon Diggs situation. First of all, I have to ask the question. Is it a situation, or is this just a weird Boston media moment? Because he's different. Stephon Diggs comes from the bulk of his career. Minnesota, not a huge media market. Buffalo, not a huge media market. I think this is a different beast he's dealing with in Boston. I've heard a lot of people talk about this when they get here, like, holy crap, do all these reporters come every day to training camp?
Where the hell? They ask that many questions, and they all have that many Twitter followers, and they all stay up your bum and ding dong.
Posterior,
posterior. Thank you. They all stay near it, adjacent to it, or up it for the majority of the season and beyond. Some do it more for the clicks and likes, as I'm sure you know, Andrew, and some do it because they're just especially good at it. No town leads the majors or leads the National Football League in exposés, incidental hit pieces, breaking news, and informative podcasts like the Patriots Media Cartel, a.k.a. Boston Sports Media.
So, you know, the example I was thinking way back to, and this is funny because Tom Curran was also involved, was Monty Beisel. When there was that famous confrontation in the locker room and Curran said, oh, don't worry, I'll be here longer than you will be. And that was Monty Beisel adjusting to a different world of Boston sports media under some pressure to perform and replace Brewski and different things going on there.
Monty Beisel?
Yes.
Wow, there's a name I've not heard in some time.
And obviously Steph Diggs is a much better player based on everything he's accomplished in his career. Now, we'll see if he's still a much better player, but in his resume, he's an all-pro caliber player who there's some pressure on him, and he's adjusting, and he's learning, and all of these things that have happened in the offseason have been part of a non-perfect start to his time in Boston. But is this a situation? Is there anything to really make of this right now with Stephon Diggs going in front of the media, talking about the media, talking about himself, being an adult and all these things? Is this an issue for Nick Fitzy Stevens, man of the people?
Pause and let me roll back real quick. Do you truly believe that there is pressure on Stephon Diggs? Before
Absolutely.
I get my answer on this, do you think
he's the biggest star on the New England Patriots right now, and his production could decide how good a second season Drake May has, who could decide how many games you win, how good this offense is. Mm-hmm. He is the well-compensated number one wide receiver on the New England Patriots.
So he should be their offensive North Star. And
sure.
I agree. I think, as I said yesterday, so goes Stephon Diggs, so goes possibly opening day and the start of the Patriots season 2025 offensively. I just wonder, you're right. Everything that you just listed, that all makes sense as far as there should be pressure on him. I just wonder if he's the type of guy that feels that pressure because he's already an established star. He's dating an international superstar. He's probably got plenty of money. He probably DGAF. So I'm kind of wondering at this point, like, does he feel all that pressure or is it perceived pressure? Maybe because is he out here to save his reputation? Is he out here because he really loves helping second-year quarterbacks ascend to their rightful place among the league superstars? Does he really care, or is he just playing a game that he's good at? These are all things I want to find out about him. Like, does he still have the dog in him? Does he still have that fight? I will find out starting Sunday. Now, as far as how all of this registers with me, it's not even a blip on the radar because Andy, once the New England Patriots brought him into town and it was more than just a cursory visit and the word was leaking out that Stephon Diggs was likely to get a contract offer and then he signed that whopping 3-for-69 deal as the Patriots bid against nobody but themselves, they had to have known what they were signing up for, as did the fans and the good people of Patriots Nation. He can be a pain in the ass. He is a lot to handle, both on the field and off. He can be good for your quarterback. He can also be great for the media in all the right and wrong reasons. I'm a fan. I think he's going to be great starting this Sunday, let alone this season for Drake and the offense. But as far as it being a thing for me, hell no.
So I think it's a thing, and I think it's a bigger thing in conjunction with what I'm going to call Mayo era, like 2 weeks of Patriots football under Mike Vrabel. Since
Did you just
the
call this Mayo era?
Mayo era. And we look at it very differently. If this were all happening under Gerard Mayo, we would be very critical of what's going on down in Foxborough. But because Mike Vrabel is the chosen one and the loved son and blah, 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 whatever he is, we are. So Mike Vrabel said he has rats in his organization. Mike Vrabel tried to laugh off and backtrack from saying he has rats in his organization.
We all thought that was hogwash.
Mike Vrabel's team put together a roster that was presented on Patriots.com with a player who wasn't actually on the roster that they then had to quickly remove the graphic and put a different graphic up with the actual roster.
The Cole Strange debacle.
Then Mike Vrabel put together a roster that included the likes of Kendrick Bourne and Jabril Peppers. Well, not for long. Then Kendrick Bourne didn't want to be here. They didn't want him here. Pay cuts, whatever. He gone. Then Jabril Peppers cut, and I guess he was going to take a pay cut, not a scheme fit. Then he gone. Now we have a player publicly in a, can I call it a kerfuffle? a kerfuffle with two of the most popular. Mm-hmm.
It's almost a fandango. Yeah, you can call it a kerfuffle.
Two of the most popular, connected, experienced members of the media corps in Phil Perry and Tom Curran. And I'm not saying that Stephon Diggs is wrong. I'm just saying he's now in a very public situation with them, and he brought it to the masses yesterday in his press conference. I think if all of this was happening under Gerard Mayo, we'd be mocking it a lot more. But because Mike Vrabel is an experienced head coach, and he's a guy we like, and we think he's steering the ship in the right direction, and he brings credibility and all these things, we're kind of ignoring that the last 2 weeks have been a little bit of a debacle down in Foxborough in terms of the way they've handled everything. You know, this isn't quite Jelani Tavai calling out fans and telling them to know their role, but it's a weird interaction with the media. It's weird public comments that are being made. So I do think this is something to keep an eye on. I very much, and
Diggs or the way things are going with the coach?
Both in conjunction with each other. One-offs here are fine. There's more than one-offs happening. And then the other issue that Stephon Diggs needs to be aware of is you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. You have been a bit of a pain in the posterior in Minnesota and in Buffalo. So it's on your well-documented track record or resume as an NFL player. I'm not going to include last year because I don't know exactly what happened last year. I know he was a captain and he was very productive, and then he got hurt and then they didn't want him back. Like, those are just the facts of the case from a year ago. So I don't know what his reputation was or wasn't in Houston.
Right.
But in Buffalo and Minnesota, isn't it fair to say he was a pain in the posterior at times?
At times, and it seems more so. I think when you see the way that Stephon Diggs operates, there's a track record. There's almost a timeline you can follow. It's supposed to start with the good guy, the inspirational leader, the dog in the locker room, the QB's best friend. Then it goes to the on-field production. Then he doesn't ultimately get what he wants, be that more catches, more targets, a Super Bowl or a new contract. Then he kind of, you know, becomes a bigger pain in the posterior, and then he becomes someone else's problem. We should be not even at the quarter mark. We shouldn't even be around the first lap on our way to the mile as far as like the Steph Diggs circle or the Steph Diggs timeline right now. And as far as the Mike Vrabel era, you're right, because normally we would look at these things and we'd say we would pass by this little brush fire on the side of the road and say, nah, I don't really need to call the fire department. That's just a little brush fire. It'll probably put itself out. Whereas last year, we knew any little fire could possibly turn into a wildfire or a conflagration in the Gerard Mayo era because nobody knew what the hell they were doing. This could be the little spark that flies off and leads to worse things. If, Andy, they go out and play like ass on Sunday.
And that is the big key, and that is why it all fell apart for Gerard Mayo. It wasn't any of the brush fires. It was the on-field failures right up until the end, where even a victory was seen as a failure in the finale. And you're right. If they go out and take care of business in September, take care of the Raiders, take care of the Steelers, win these winnable games, at least split the month, you'll be well on your way. Now, if you go get exposed against the Raiders and you lose at home, and then you marry that up with all these other issues, they will be magnified and they will become bigger issues. I do want to say, though, it is every bit Stephon Diggs is right to take this to the press conference, to the masses, because what Phil Perry said was in a public spectrum and was then talked about and magnified by people like us, right? Oh, Phil Perry said he's becoming a pain in the posterior. Podcasts, aggregations, radio, we're talking about it, we're referencing it. So even if Phil Perry did apologize in private, Stephon Diggs deserves to get his public justification, his message out there, whatever he wants to say about being an adult and a professional and wanting to get along with the media. So I may not have handled it this way. It may not be the ideal way, but he has every right to go public with what he did yesterday in his comments and talk about Tom and Phil.
I do as well, because before he actually hits that part on the Steph Diggs timeline where he becomes the pain in the posterior, he doesn't need anyone else, advocating for what a pain he can actually be. Like, let it. You know what? They probably shouldn't have gone as far. Maybe he can be a nuisance at times, or he can be, he can be high maintenance. If Phil and Tom had only gone that far and not, the PG to TV, the TVMA version of saying someone's a pain in the ass, pain in the posterior, then I don't think we're here today. But Andy, here we are. And now Sunday proves out everything. Sunday could erase all of this, or Sunday could turn things worse quick.
And they knew what they were getting in bed with when they signed Stephon Diggs, out of desperation, in my opinion. Because if you remember, Josh McDaniels was asked about Stephon Diggs. And reminder that Josh McDaniels' brother coached Stephon Diggs in Houston last year. And this is what Josh had to say.
Steph is a unique individual, unique player. Got a really good skill set. Been a very productive player for a long time. Excited about his addition. My brother had an opportunity to coach him last year in Houston. So I have a, you know, little bit of insight into, you know, what he's like day to day. And I'm really excited about having him here.
And I want to put that in perspective. The grin when he says unique individual is one of those knowing grins where we're all in on the information. We're not going to talk about this, but we all kind of know what I'm talking about here kind of grin. And I don't think it was a fearful grin. It was just an, we're aware that Stephon Diggs is a number one receiver with some baggage. He's mercurial. He's a diva. Whatever description you want to deal with. And the Patriots have dealt with that. There was a boat. There was a baggie. There was pink stuff. There's showing up late to practice. He's not late. He's working with other trainers. We didn't know that. Why is he going right into drills? We've never seen this before. Now he's calling out some media members in a press conference who called him out first. That's just sort of the roller coaster world you're going to get when you have these types of players. And whatever that type is, I don't even know the specific word I want to use. Stephon Diggs is one of these
divas.
Types of players.
I mean, it's a diva. He's a wide receiver one. He wants to be an alpha. He's a diva. He demands first class treatment, and he was trying to, in his mind, I think he was handling it in a first class way yesterday. Now, again, go out Sunday, go 6 for 57 with a touchdown. Patriots
win. Love ya.
All is forgiven. All is forgotten. If you go 2 for 19 and the Patriots lose 23-17, woof, man, I wouldn't. Oh, that's right. We'll be doing the post game as well as the recap on Monday.
And he, if he only catches two, I think he'll have problems. Like if he catches balls and they're, then it'll be fine. If he's targeted his 6 to 10 times a game and he's catching 4 to 6 passes a game, he'll be fine. So production is going to be key for the team to overcome these little brush fires in August and early September. And production is going to be key for Stephon Diggs to not be a pain in the posterior, to be a contributing member of the New England Patriots. 617-779-7937. We're leading off with the soap opera that is Stephon Diggs. Remember, an hour from now, we'll talk to one of the actors in this soap opera. That's Tom Curran, NBC Sports Boston. Up next, we do need to address the Red Sox. Roman Anthony's hurt, and boy, did they look bad, at least in the second inning last night, in an ugly loss before the off day going on the road. 617-779-7937. Little Red Sox talk up next. But first, Dan Ball has what's trending.
The exclusive home for Patriots Monday and Friday.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending now on WEEI, brought to you by the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention's Out of the Darkness Walk. The Red Sox fell to the Guardians last night at Fenway Park. The final was 8-1. Despite series wins in two of the last three homestand-ending series, the Sox have now lost the final three game of three straight homestands against the Royals, the Orioles, and now the Guardians. Off day today for the Sox, they begin a six-game Western road trip on Friday that will feature three-game series against the Diamondbacks and the Athletics. Boston is currently tied with the Yankees for the top AL wildcard spot. From earlier today, the Red Sox are placing reliever Jordan Hicks on the injured list with a shoulder injury and calling up Chris Murphy before tomorrow night's game in Arizona. The Patriots open up the 2025 season on Sunday at 1 o'clock against the Raiders. Tune in to hear Ted Johnson and the crew on WEEI's NFL Football Sunday beginning at 10 a.m. Also, Andy Hart and Nick Fitzy-Stevens bring you the Six Rings postgame show after the conclusion of Red Sox coverage on Sunday. Patriots cornerback Christian Gonzalez is once again the lone player not spotted in practice today. His status for Sunday is still unknown. Also new from within the hour, per Ian Rapp report, Raiders wide receiver Amari Cooper has informed the team that he no longer has the desire to play and intends to retire. Tonight, the 2025 NFL season kicks off in Philadelphia as the reigning Super Bowl champion Eagles host the Dallas Cowboys. Kickoff is at 8:20. Coverage of that game begins right here on WEEI at 7 p.m. after the Christian Arcand show. And from around the league, outside linebacker Nick Benito and the Broncos reached agreement on a four-year, $106 million extension, making him the highest paid non-quarterback in Broncos franchise history. Join the fight against suicide on Saturday, October 18th at the Out of the Darkness Walk on the Boston Common to prevent suicide and raise awareness about mental health. Proceeds benefit the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Register today at afsp.org/Boston Walk. That's afsp.org/Boston Walk. I'm Dan Ball. This is Trending Now on WEEI and WEEI.com. And now with this week's Moose Sox Report, here's Nick Fitzy-Stevens.
Thank you very much. Ball game. Appreciate that. Here is your Woo Sox report for the week. The Worcester Red Sox have lost two in a row to Scranton, but have four more at home Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, with tonight's game at 6.05 p.m. from Polar Park in beautiful Worcester, Massachusetts. As far as how the Woo Sox relate to your Boston Red Sox, of course, we saw the smashing debut last Friday night of Peyton Tolley, going five strong with eight strikeouts in his Fenway and Red Sox debut. He's got another start coming up soon. Christian Campbell, per Alex Cora, is not likely to be called up to the Major League squad anytime soon. Kyle Harris, reportedly to be called up this week, is dealing with an ankle injury. We'll keep our eyes on that, as he could be called up sometime soon for a spot start or to contribute to the Red Sox rotation and or bullpen in advance of their charge for the postseason. There's your Woo Sox report, everyone. Once again, it is brought to you by our friends at the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention's Walk to Prevent the Darkness. That's coming up on in Central Mass. I apologize. My computer froze. Once again, the Woo Sox report is brought to you by the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention's Central Mass Out of the Darkness Walk to Fight Suicide on Saturday, September 27th at Polar Park in Worcester. This is your old pal Nick Fitzy-Stevens here with the Woo Sox report and everything that's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com. More afternoons and some Sox talk coming up.
This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy-Stevens, and Ted Johnson.
Here's the pitch. Swing and a miss. He got him. And a miserable night for the Red Sox comes to a close. 8-1, Cleveland salvages the finale. Life without Roman Anthony not off to a great start.
It sounds harsh, but we have to move on, right? We've got to put that uniform on today and try to win a game. And we've been through this before. I expect the group to do the same thing.
That was Will Fleming with a disappointed call of the Red Sox game last night. An 8-1 loss to the Guardians.
Wasn't that close.
And then Alex Cora. No, it wasn't. It was... if you could take away one inning, they had a chance, because things really fell apart in the second inning. But for those of us that hate bullpen games and openers, that was an example of why I hate such things, because that was just, I mean, you were bringing in Jordan Hicks in the first inning. In the first inning of a game, we also get the answer to the trivia question, thanks to Will Fleming. Last Red Sox player to close out a game and then start the very next game.
That's right, was?
Calvin Schiraldi in 1987. Remember Calvin Schiraldi.
I would never have guessed Schiraldi.
No, I wouldn't have either. But
year after the World Series, I wanted to never think about him again after his meltdown in Game 6.
I was also a little fat Andy back at the time, so it was a long time ago. I wouldn't have guessed anybody from that era. But Red Sox lose 8-1 first game without Roman Anthony. We'll talk more about that as the show rolls on. But we've gotten a lot of reaction to the Stephon Diggs situation with NBC Sports Boston, Phil Perry, and Tom Curran, and Diggs' expectations for the season. So let's go to the phone line, 617-779-7937. Start things off with Chris in Holyoke. What's up, Chris? Chris!
Oh, no, it's Brezbot.
Hey, guys, thank you for taking my call.
Oh, it's Brezbot. Bye, Brezbot.
Oh, Chris, you're in outer space. Come back to Earth and call us from land.
Call us back, Chris, and we'd love to get your Diggs thoughts. 617-779-7937. Let's go to Brian and Bill Ricca. What are your thoughts on Diggs, Brian?
Hey, guys. Two things real quick. When Stephon Diggs came to the team and he was rehabbing, I think this is on the team. Why would he switch rehab teams during the offseason / training camp and go to a new doctor? That doesn't make any sense. And one last point on your last one of the last points you made before the break. Tom Curran, I'm sorry, he's not one of the most popular local sports guys. People listen to him because it makes them angry, and it's kind of disgusting, honestly. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Brian.
Well,
I'm sure you're
Brian,
looking
how do
forward.
You feel about Tom Curran? Tell us next time.
About 60 minutes from now when we're talking to Tom Curran here on WEEI Afternoons. And I'm sorry, you don't have to like Tom Curran. You don't have to like anybody. But he is one of the most experienced and most popular media members on the Patriots beat. He has
connected
been,
and well-versed, Andy.
Since the 90s. I mean, he's worked his way up through the writing system and then eventually to NBC Sports Boston and Quick Slants. And He's notable, was national for a while with NBC. We do hits with him here, obviously. He's well-connected, well-known, well-liked. A lot of people listen to Tom Curran, and a lot of people talk to Tom Curran, which makes him a very interesting person to contact with. The Diggs situation with switching rehab teams, I was not aware that this was a situation. So, Fitzy, I'm not sure if you had any knowledge of that Brian speaketh of.
But that does sort of ring a bell, as in, I'm working with these guys. Okay, now we'd love for you, now that you're part of the team, we'd love for you to take your rehab here. And he's like, no, it's going really well elsewhere. And as of right now, can you argue with the results, Andy? I mean, he's now 10 months removed from surgery, and he looks like he's as quick as ever.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to question. Based on, I thought he would start camp on PUP, and then there'd be the question as to whether he starts the season on PUP. And then we saw him, and I went down there the first day of camp, and I was like, well, good thing he's not on PUP because he looks ready. There's a bounce in his step. The health is the most insignificant aspect of the summer for Stephon Diggs, right? Like, he's been out there. The management of the health has been more critical, and that's where, you know, Vrabel has talked about getting him ready and not putting him out there in preseason games and the different ways they've managed that.
He did look good in the joint practices, though. If you remember the footage of him, and I know how much you love one-on-ones, just like you love some of the other many things in the heart of
PFF, they should grade one-on-ones. That would be there, like, you go. Let's dream. Do
PFF one-on-ones coming up next. So he looked good. I mean, he cooked. He did his. He still could move. He still had some games, still had some giddy up, not a lot of hitches. And I think people should take heart in the idea that there weren't a lot of, like, oh, it's a Steph Diggs maintenance day. Like, dude was getting after it every day. Now, it was coach's decision to not put him in beyond the joint practices into the pretend season games, because I think they know there's not much to prove. The guy's got book. The guy's got tape. Guy knows what he's doing.
Yeah, my only concern that I've brought up is all these guys I've interviewed, talked to, dealt with over the years, and talking about, you know, you're in shape and you know you can cut and you've done all that, but you still need to get that first hit, that first tackle right on the leg,
tuned up,
pop up and be like, oh yeah, it's fine. Nothing feels out of whack. I'm good to go now. And once you shake that off, that's sort of the final step in the whole process. But no, this isn't. This has never really been about his knee. This has been about the boat and the pink stuff and not talking to the media and the management and why is he out there for this but not for this, and is he late for practice? Is he not late for practice? Was he just doing something else that we weren't told about? And it'd be easier to talk about that if he answered questions with the media. Like, that's what this is all about. And then the Phil Perry comment that clearly bothered him. Right? Being called a bit of a pain in the posterior would probably bother me too. But then there's also those, like, that idea, like, oh, did I hit too close to home? Did I strike a nerve? Do you know you've been a little bit of a pain in the posterior? So it's all interesting. And it's all something we're going to talk about with Tom Curran, as I said, at 3:30. But we do need to get to these Red Sox up next here on WEEI Afternoons. We need to get to Jordan Hicks. We need to get to the guy who's not named Greg Maddux, who threw 90 miles an hour but made the Red Sox look like they were facing Greg Maddux, striking out against a mediocre pitcher yesterday quite a bit. And I have a simple question. Was the performance last night by your Red Sox, was that a reaction to the Roman Anthony injury, or was that just a simple one-off bad baseball game that started with a bullpen opener? 617-779-7937. A little Red Sox talk up next here on WEEI Afternoons.
You're listening to WEEI Afternoons with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
Reports with Kyle Harrison, where we were kind of led to believe he might be starting games. What's that all about?
We're going in a bullpen day, and then we have an off day tomorrow, and then we'll reassess the situation of our roster for Friday. But we feel like today we can go to Bernie. We got Matsy for two, a lot of left-hander hitters for in that lineup, so we'll mix and match, knowing that May it can go three innings today, and we'll go from there.
Ant wrong, Johnson.
That was Alex Cora with us yesterday, Fenway Park, WEEI Afternoons. Are they the first team in history to have back-to-back off days? Because it looked like they had an off day yesterday while playing a game. Not in this economy, Andy.
Meow, meow.
And now they're on their way to Arizona and then Sacramento. The bottom fell out of that bullpen game in the second inning. They gave up one run in the first inning, then they had a debacle of a second.
Your boy Jordan Hicks was a part of that. There was a weird...
He's your boy, because when someone comes in, gives up four straight hits, gets no outs, and has a ball literally hit to Brighton,
that's your guy. That wasn't great. And then they had the weird catcher's interference, runner, blah, this, that, that didn't go their way, looked like it was going to go their way, replay. They were kind of a mess. Six runs in the second inning, and, well, the game was over. They scored one measly run, lose 8-1. Fitzy, do you believe that that was any sort of reaction for a team that we know Bregman's talked about it, Cora's talked about it. That's a huge blow to lose Roman Anthony. He's your best everyday player. He's your best everyday hitter. He had done things with the bat and his on-base percentage, but also he had done things in terms of energy and belief and sort of a vibe that he brought to the team. Was yesterday's game a one-off, or was that a sign of a team that was sulking because they lost their best player?
Well, you're going to say, oh, here comes the Fenway fanboy, always defending his manager and carrying water for Cora.
It was a one-off, Andy.
Do you want me to say it in the annoying Andy Hart voice? Or
sure.
It was a one-off, Andy. Ooh.
Nothing to see here. Move
you heard
along.
The stat from Dan during trending, though.
I did.
Like, this is like the, what is this, the third series where they win the series, but they crap the bed in the finale? I think the Sox are content to just get two out of three. And they, once it was a bullpen game, you want to talk about waving the white flag. You start Bernardino, who had pitched in the previous two games and closed the night before. Insert Calvin Giraldi factoid there. And then when he gets in trouble, the guy you call to put the fire out is Jordan Hicks. Jordan Hicks is a human grease fire. He doesn't put the fire out. He lights the whole kitchen ablaze. The hell was that? It was such a bad idea. That was such a mess last night. I think by the time it was 4-0, 5-0, 6-0, whatever it got to before the Sox even put a single stripe on the board, like, they're out. Like, they were already thinking of, like, did I bring my toothbrush? Do I have my face cream? Should I have my wife drop that off at the ballpark? Like, they were good, Andy. They were checked out.
I will say Zach Kelly looked pretty good in the middle innings when the game was over. He gave you four innings and pitched pretty well. But, you know, the Kyle Harrison thing, so I was listening to, we leave Fenway, I'm driving home, and I hear, again, Will Fleming telling me about Kyle Harrison, but he still has this little ankle thing. He was up in Boston, now they've sent him back to Worcester, and he's got this, I don't know, I tried to give Cora the opportunity to tell us.
Is it a sprain?
I don't know, and I don't know how he did it. I don't know if it's an injury or just a soreness or fatigue, or what did Tito, you say, was barking at him? His ankle might be barking at him a little bit, like, but Kyle Harrison should have pitched last night. Like, yep. That's my, I can't say it any more simply. I do think sometimes this team under Craig Breslow, and I have to include our guy in the mix, Alex Cora, but also Jason Veritek and Andrew Bailey. I think sometimes they overthink things. Like, they just, like, too much. Like, we could do this and that, and with the day off and that and this, and move these guys, and we got this guy doing this. Or you could just start Kyle Harrison and see if he could maybe give you five innings, like, and see what he's got. Like,
give him a little Tolley game, especially like Cleveland's lineup is nothing to write home about. And that's, you know, whether you send postcards or email, like, they stink right now. And they looked like world beaters last night against that trash patrol of a bullpen game that you rolled out there. How bad is his ankle that he can't try to give you four?
Well, and that's what I don't understand. Like, is he hurt and that's why he's not pitching? Or did you overthink it and want to delay the debut for some reason? I also had this weird, like, soap opera theory. Did you not want to pitch him because he's the last unknown part of the Devers trade, and Devers is going off in San Francisco hitting bomb after bomb after bomb, and you didn't want maybe this guy to flame out and have a bad debut at Fenway Park, and that'll be tied together? Was there some weird, like, narrative control story thing you were trying to do? Because yesterday just felt like a perfect example of a team that modern baseball, the computers and the meetings and everything, they overthought it and should have just brought up Kyle Harrison and started him and see what. Like, I would have felt better about that game in a weird way if Kyle Harrison had lost 8-1. If he had gone out
I'd
there.
I'd feel even worse.
See, I wouldn't because I, like, I don't.
Then he sucks. And
well,
then
not
you're
necessarily.
Like, well, I don't have him.
Just because a guy has one bad outing doesn't mean he sucks. Just because he has one good outing doesn't mean he's awesome. Like, there's ebbs and flows to the season, but
I don't know. It was like a give-up game yesterday. It felt like they waved the white flag in the very beginning of that game, and it was just like, you know, let's just get – how do we get to 27 outs? I don't care whether we win or lose. I don't care how many runs we give up. Mm-hmm. How do we just accumulate the 27 outs we need to get on a plane, fly to the West Coast, and be done with this series and this homestand
it's
and everything?
Exactly what it felt like. That is exactly what yesterday's effort felt like. When Jordan Hicks allowed that absolute bomb, I think everyone, nope, I'm not, you know, it took a lot to come back the night before, because don't forget, emotionally, they may have been spent from the night before, Andy.
Yeah.
You watch your ace give up four long Johnsons and squander a 5-1 lead, and suddenly it's 7-5 Guardians. So that takes a lot to come back from. And your knight in rookie shining armor, who's been the best player for the past 2.5 months since he got called up, he went down for the rest of the regular season. So to overcome all of that and get a 4-run win the night before, they last night were probably spent.
And when you give them the opportunity to give in to that, let's just say they're mentally, emotionally, whatever, spent. When you treat it the way the Red Sox treated it, I feel like you open the door for everybody to be like, oh, well, if the team is not really invested in this game, why should I be invested in this game? You're right. I'm going to call my wife and make sure she has the bag packed so we can get out to the West Coast, and I don't forget my toiletries and my reading material for the plane or whatever I mean. Yeah, I just – yesterday was a doom day from the beginning, but I'm not going to assume this is what they're going to be post-Roman Anthony. Like, we know they're not as good offensively, right? That's just a fact. They're just not as good offensively. You lose your leadoff hitter who has a 400 on-base percentage and a 300 average, like, you're not as good offensively. That doesn't mean you're always going to score one run. That doesn't mean you're always going to suck pitching. That doesn't mean you're always going to be down 6-1 in the second inning. We did have a texter that brought up something that has seeped into my mind. So this whole year we've been talking about the big three, right? And, you know, you're going to have Meyer, you're going to have Roman. Well, two of the three are hurt, and the other one is apparently toxic, and Christian Campbell, they don't want him to be on the roster. Because
what is that something, by the way? Cora mentioned it yesterday. He said, you know, he could be hitting 500, but still not doing some of the little things we want him to do, so we're not going to call him up. Or he could be batting 180, but doing the little things that we've tried to coach him up with, and we'd be happy to call him up. What are those little things?
Well, I don't know if it's now they're allowing him to transition back to being an outfielder, because he was a second baseman, then he was going to be a first baseman, but now they have Nathaniel Lowe, and they've settled on some first base platooning there. I think maybe they're making him an outfielder again, post-Roman Anthony and with the Abreu injury, because he's been playing in the outfield now. I think now they're trying to let him settle back in the outfield and not, you know, yo-yo him around position to position or jerk him around too much, given everything that's already gone on in a short period of time for a very young player. So, but the bigger issue is all these young guys that we thought were going to be the heart of the team and the fun and the energy and the clubhouse, you know, they're dropping like flies, and they're still in the clubhouse. Unfortunately, they're just watching in hoodies from the dugout. 617-779-7937. How worried are you about your Boston Red Sox after last night's 8-1 loss post-Roman Anthony injury announcement? We'll continue to take your phone calls on that. Up next, it's time for the three-point stance. And I'm going to tell you which Boston player needs to go now and why paying to let him or make him go away is the best thing that could happen to his team. That's up next, 3-Point Stance on WEEI Afternoons.